Chris Kandiah got in touch with us as a church. Some of you will know of that name from the Sunday profile we gave to Home for Good a few weeks ago. But he got in touch with us partly because he knows of us. He used to live in Brighton, so he's got a connection with us. But he wanted to introduce us to a project that he had initiated or was involved in the initiation of, which is called Home for Good. And behind that was a desire to raise the profile of the need in this nation for more people, particularly within the church, to be open to being adoptive parents or foster parents. Huge need in the nation. And Chris has really been living with a passion that the church can make a big difference. And so he wanted to know whether we would like to get involved in that. He came to speak to a group of leaders, and we had a few questions that we kind of worked through with Chris, and it got to a point where we felt, yeah, we really want to get behind this initiative. And Steve Horn and myself, Steve is one of the other leaders here at Church of Christ the King. He's around. On a couple of occasions, we gathered with around about 15, 20 people that we already knew were either involved in fostering or adoption, or were considering that, or were social workers in that field. And it's just a fascinating couple of evenings we had, hearing their stories, some of the challenges, some of the questions, some of the joys, sorrows of the process they were going through. And it's on the back of that, having built that kind of picture in terms of what some of our people are already involved in that process, we then launched a kind of the profile for Home for Good here in this building on the 14th of September, and then across the other sites on the 21st. And we knew that it would provoke some interest, and we knew there would be a need to show people what next steps could be. And so this is what this evening is about. It's for those that are thinking about, well, maybe this is for me. Some of you would all be at very differing levels in that. Some of you may not be feeling that. You may just be here because you think, I would love to support others that are doing that. And that's great. So, you know, you're most welcome as well. And we've got some great helpers for tonight. So we've got Phil and Connie, who have come down from London. They're from Home for Good. And I'm going to hand over to Phil in a moment. And then we have Rachel and Claire from PACT, which is an adoption agency. And they're going to be sharing in the evening as well later. So there'll be a number of little talks. There'll be some video testimonies to watch. Steve will be hosting some questions and answers later on at the end of the evening, which we expect to finish around about 9-ish. I know the team will probably be able to stay for a while answering questions. So I think that's about it. So I think probably, Phil, it's over to you, isn't it? Thank you. Let's welcome Phil, shall we?
Yeah. I'm going to take this off because there's no way I'm going to stand still. Thanks ever so much for your welcome, Steve. My name is Phil Green, and I have the privilege of leading Home for Good with Chris Kandiah. And it's just great to be with you here this evening. Steve's already alluded to the fact that there may be several types of people here tonight. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to ask you what type you might be in. So if you're okay with putting your hand up at this point, that would be great. But I can understand that we're going to be talking about some kind of sensitive topics today. So if you don't want to put your hand up, that's absolutely fine as well. So who's here tonight because they are thinking about adopting? Great. Who's here tonight because they're interested about fostering? Who's here tonight because they already are foster carers or adoptive parents and are really keen to find out more about Home for Good and support others who might be interested in doing it? Great, thank you. And who's here tonight because they just kind of really like the sound of what Home for Good is about and would really like to support families that choose to foster or adopt? Well, fantastic. That is great that there are so many of you here tonight. So Steve has given a kind of a potted introduction to Home for Good that was really useful. But when we've talked about Home for Good, we've often used numbers. So we'll often say that there are 6,000 children waiting to be adopted in the UK, and that there's a desperate need for 9,000 new foster carers. And we'll then say that we've done the maths. That takes us to 15,000 children or homes needed. And we reckon that we're in contact with about 15,000 churches. So we then do the maths, that if one family in each church chose to foster or adopt, we would wipe out the waiting list. But it's not only about those families within the church who choose to foster or adopt, but it's about the other families in the church wrapping around them to support them in the difficult and challenging task that they take on when it comes to fostering or adopting. Now, we often talk about those numbers, and they kind of are grand and they grab people's attention. But we kind of know in reality that that's not how those targets are going to be met. Because things happen in community, don't they? So more often than not, we find that a few people in a church foster, and then other people see that going on, and support groups are formed, and then more people in the church foster. So it's just great that there's so many of you here tonight. And I say that just so you don't think that only one family here tonight are allowed to foster or adopt, or you mess up our numbers, because clearly it's not going to work like that, and it's just great. But this is not just about the numbers. And this evening, as we begin to take things forward, and many of you are exploring your own journey, we need to go from talking about those 15,000 homes that are desperately needed, and we need to start thinking about those individual children. Those individual children who are waiting. Some of them have been waiting years for a home. So I just want to show you this little video clip. It's from America. It's a bit of a rap. But I just think it will kind of get us thinking about some of the issues.
A lot of people see justice as the most futile thing you can do with your life. Give your life completely to business and you see the money piling up. Be a health nut, eat right, go to the gym, and your muscles will grow and your body will look good and you'll see results. But when it comes to justice, it seems like you just can't get ahead. You patch up one hole and something else rips open. You bring peace to one region and war breaks out in another. You rebuild after an earthquake and a tsunami hits. And you work and you work and you work, and there's never any profit. There's no bank where you can store a surplus amount of justice in. Stability is never permanent. Something always tips and people always ask, is it even worth it? And that question, though understandable, quite frankly, it's ridiculous. And it rarely comes from those who are actually tired from pursuing justice and not just tired of the idea. It rarely comes from people who've labored for years and have good reason to ask it. And you know why they never ask? Those type of people become friends with those who suffer. Family, even. Because it's one thing to wonder if someone else's freedom is worth fighting for. But when you begin to identify with that someone else, commune with them, that's when the question is no longer worth asking. That's when it becomes offensive even. What do you mean, is it worth my time? That doesn't even deserve an answer. I don't care how long it takes. I don't care how many times we fail. I don't care how little progress is made. You never stop fighting for your own.
The church in recent years in the UK has made such a difference in the UK on so many different problems. You think of street pastors, you think of Christians Against Poverty, and all those organisations are doing absolutely fantastic work. But when we started talking about Home for Good, we realised that what we were asking was kind of slightly more, wasn't it? Because although projects like CAP and Street Passes are absolutely essential, and I don't want to demean them in any way, shape or form, you go out and participate in those projects, and then you go back to your home. What we're asking is something very, very different. we're asking you to invite a vulnerable child who may have come with all kinds of baggage created from all kinds of trauma, and inviting that person into your home to become part of your family. And that is a big ask. But also think about it from our church point of view. Just think how great it would be for our churches if people from the community, the vulnerable, the people who are on the fringes of society, become part of our church community, become part of our church family. Just think how good that would be. We are often challenged by local authorities. Well, surely we're just trying to change these children too much, that we want to force them into our mould as Christians. But more often than not, we see things the other way around, because these children, they change our churches. They bring all the challenges of their life into our churches, and that changes our churches to become more like the church that Jesus wanted. So what is Home for Good kind of really keen about? Firstly, we've been wanting to acknowledge the great work that foster carers and adoptive parents already do. Across the UK in churches, there are many people who have been fostering and adopting for years. So what we don't want to say is this is a new idea. It's not. But we want to give those foster carers and adoptive parents a voice to speak out and feel that the fostering they do, the adoption they have done, is kind of part of their ministry and recognised within their churches. So once a year we run Adoption Sunday at the beginning of November. And last year we just heard this fantastic story of what one church did. They decided that they would give foster carers the red carpet treatment as they came to church that morning, just to recognise that actually the church hadn't really paid much attention to them in the past and just let them to get on with it. And they wanted to kind of say sorry for this, and they wanted to say, we really value this work you do. So red carpet treatment with cake and flowers. But they didn't just do this for the foster carers in their own church. They invited the foster carers from the whole community to come to church that Sunday morning and just said, well done for the great work you do. So we want to begin with recognising the great work that foster carers and adoptive parents already do. The second thing we want to do is we do want to encourage churches to step up for the challenge and seeing if there are Christians who could become foster carers or adoptive parents. And it's great that there's so many of you here tonight. So I'm not going to say any more about that one, because clearly this church has taken that call seriously. And then thirdly, we want to ensure that those foster carers and adoptive families are supported. And we think the church is just a great community of support for families that foster and adopt. And as we speak to local authorities and voluntary adoption agencies around the country, that is recognised. It is recognised that the church community offers so much support. And we've just heard some great stories of what churches have done. There was a church in South London, and they have a lot of carpenters in their church. So they have said to any family who is going through the fostering assessment process or the adoption assessment process that if work needs doing on their house to get it appropriate for young children, that they will do the work for free. And they've offered that service not just for people within the church, but the wider community as well. There's another story I heard about a baby who had been fostered by a family. And the baby just would not stop crying and kind of had to be held the whole time. And by and large, this was okay. So foster parents were getting lots of cuddle time in. And I like cuddle time. I've just had a son 5 weeks ago. Meal times were a real challenge for them, because their birth children were kind of, and their family time was being kind of a bit disrupted. So the church did what churches do really, really well. They put together a rota. But this was a rota that everyone wanted to be on. It was the cuddle rota. People would take it in turns to go round. I think it was just in their small groups. There were people they knew well. It wasn't kind of a wide invite. And just to enable that family to have a meal time together. I could tell stories like this all evening, but I realise we must move on. But I am just going to tell you one more. Family fostered teenagers, and one teenager turned up and she was really, really insecure and was covered in piercings. And they were like, well, they normally gave their foster children the opportunity to go to church with them on Sunday morning if they wanted to. But they were like, that's just not going to work because we're going to take this insecure teenager to church and everyone in the room is just going to stare at her and it's going to be really just bad for her. So what do? They phoned up their small group and said, are you willing to skip the church service on Sunday morning? And will you come around our house and we'll take the dog for a walk and our foster child will come for a walk with us if she wants. And that's what they did. And they did that the next week too. And the next week. And the week after that. And by the time the foster child did decide to check out the church, when she walked into that building, she didn't notice anyone staring at her because she was greeted by this whole small group that descended to welcome her into the church family. And I just think that's a great example of what I said earlier about this changes churches. This changes churches. So this evening, we're going to talk a little bit about adoption and a little bit about fostering, just to give you kind of an introduction of what is involved. I'm sure we will leave you with more questions than we answer, but hopefully it will just begin your journey wherever you are. Home for Good has been launched as its own organisation at the beginning of September, which is just great that we're now able to do so much more. And part of that is we are now offering the Home for Good pathway to adoption. We are not an adoption agency, but we are now working with two adoption agencies, PACT in kind of the south, and an adoption agent called Adoption Matters in the north. And we're really promoting this as a route to adoption because we trust them. We really trust them. They're outstanding in terms of their Ofsted rating. They are committed to providing a faith-friendly service. And we're doing faith training with their staff so they understand the issues of faith. They understand belief and how that impacts family life. And the final thing you'll hear a bit about tonight as well is they offer support, post-adoption support, for life. Which is just kind of, if you are an adoptive parent, you'll kind of know how big a deal that is. So we'll be telling you a little bit about that tonight as well. So thank you for listening to me. I am going to just now play a short video, which is an interview with Maria and Adam, who are from CCK, just to talk a little bit about their experiences.
Well, I'm Adam.
And I'm Maria.
And we have a two-year-old boy, Isaac, who is our own. We go to the racecourse site, and we're really hopeful and excited about adopting in the future, adopting a child into our family.
So why are you thinking of that?
Yeah, so I was actually adopted when I was 6 years old into a Christian family. My adopted parents already had three of their own children, but they, after a lot of prayer and thinking about it, they decided that they would like to adopt a child themselves.
I suppose you're at this point. What if people are watching this video today and they're saying, oh, wow, what would you want to say to them if they were thinking about adoption?
I think we'd say consider it. Don't rule yourself out easily. I don't think there's few greater things that people could do in the world than offer a home to a child who doesn't have a family. And
yeah, I also think that adoption might not actually be for you, but actually you could be a great support to those who do around you. I know from my adopted parents, they said that their church family was a great support to them. They encouraged them, they prayed with them, they provided opportunities for respite and kind of meals for them. And so actually it's not just the adopting a child, there's a lot more that people can do around that.
Just ask you, what is it about your own sort of story and experience in these last few years that maybe make it so important for you, the whole issue of adoption?
I think personally, working in child protection services, I can see a massive and increasing need for more families to foster and adopt. And I just think it's an incredible, exciting opportunity for the church to think about the opportunity to provide homes for the country's most vulnerable children, to provide a permanent family for those children, and to bring them into God's family as well. And the support that we have amongst each other can just make all the difference in that. And I think, I know that's been your story, that your parents would say that the prayer, the encouragement and the support of their church family made all the difference. And you've said that you don't think you would be a Christian today, and we certainly wouldn't be here today were it not for the fact that they considered it and chose to adopt.
Right, the fact that you were adopted into an established family, what does that mean for you now?
Now it's great. I kind of see my two brothers and my sister as my biological siblings, and we are very close. And I don't see them as any different at all.
What of your story really makes this issue, what you feel is important about this issue?
I think for me, I know that my life would be completely different if I hadn't been adopted into a Christian family. It's quite scary to think where that potentially could be. But just God was completely on it. And it's just amazing what he's actually done in my life. So
that's great.
That's great. I'm now going to invite Connie up, who is one of the newest members of the Home for Good team. And over the next 10 minutes or so, she's just going to introduce a little bit about the adoption application process.
Hi. Claire, shall I interview you first? So Claire is one of the PACT social workers based in the Brighton office. And I'm just going to ask her a few questions so you get a better idea of what PACT is. And then I will continue to talk about adoption a little bit more after that. Shall I come round here so we can kind of share? Just shout if you can't hear. So can you tell us a little bit more about the families who adopt?
I mean, the families that adopt come from all sorts of different backgrounds. It'd be from minority groups, and they're from people from different ethnic backgrounds. Single people can adopt. It's from all different faiths. There's basically, there's no set rules. We're a very open agency.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit about the common myths about adoption?
Some of the myths is that, it might not be so relevant here, but you don't have to be married to adopt. You can adopt as a single person. You don't have to own your own house. Financially, people can come, they don't have to have loads and loads of money, it's just assessed to see if you have enough to support a child. One thing that is true is that you do need to have a bedroom for an adopted child. I don't know what other kind of myths people may be thinking of now that they think is a barrier, but later we can answer different questions from people. But I think some people think the process is going to take a really long time. But generally, from sort of first phoning up, the actual assessment process is 6 months, but from phoning up, it might take, 9 months, something like that. Can't guarantee how long it's going to take to actually find the right child for you, but it's not as long as you may think that that is. Some of the main myths, yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit more about the children who are needing adoption?
The majority of children in the United Kingdom do actually come into adoption because of experiencing abuse or neglect. There's not many children that are relinquished these days. So there's quite extensive training that adopters actually have within the first stage, which we call stage one, where lots of checks are done. But there's a 3-day training course that people have to go on to actually explain that is quite heavy for some people, but it's realistic. It's looking at the different backgrounds of the parents, looking at how difficult it is for that child to come into the care system. The children may have come from very, very, very difficult backgrounds, and some of the parents may have had drug and alcohol problems. Some may have actually physically abused their children or even sexually abused their children. There could be serious neglect issues, but it may be because their parents or parent may have had mental health issues and just not able to look after them anymore, or they might have a severe learning disability and not be able to look after them. But it's very important to actually You will be given a lot of information about the backgrounds of parents, and a lot of the children will then come with their own issues because of the background that they've actually come from.
Great. Thanks a lot, Claire. Feel free to go back to your stand. I'll just tell you a quick bit about what's brought me here, just so that you have an idea of who I am and where I've come from into this sector. So my history is that I was brought up in a family with foster children, and my extended family have a lot of adopted children, so it's always been something that I've been passionate about, and as I've grown up, I've clearly understood where the need for this is, and I've worked in a women's refuge with loads and loads of children who are in and out of care a lot, so it's something that I'm really passionate about, and it is just so wonderful to be here with so many people who share that passion for these children and who care about bringing justice for these children. So if there's something that you need, questions you need answering at the end about how it is for siblings to grow up with in those families, then please feel free to talk about it with me. I'll just talk a little bit about adoption. We've already heard a bit from Claire, so I'll skip through bits we've already heard. Okay, so what is adoption? So we know that adoption is a way to find a secure and permanent family for children who have often experienced trauma and abuse. And it is a legal procedure. So the procedure does go through the court, and the court grants the family permanent care of the child or children who go through the adoption order. And in a way that's different from fostering, this then means that the parents have full responsibility and rights over that child, and they become their forever family. And they have the responsibilities and duties that any parent would have for those children. So the child takes on the adoptive parent's surname and becomes the parents become the mum and dad to that child. Who can adopt? So we've heard a little bit about that already, but we'll just quickly run through it. No upper age limit. So the minimum age is 21, but there is no upper age limit. I mean, with that, it's good to be aware that younger children do tend to get placed with younger parents, but that's not always the case. And case by case, the assessing social worker will decide on that. Again, single people or couples, we've heard that already, but it's always good to think that in a church environment, the support that you will get from your church will be so essential in this situation. So if you are adopting as a single person, the assessing social worker will be looking particularly at your support network. And if you do have a good support network in your church, that will be a massive tick for you. And also, when you actually do come to have your child in your house, having that support around you will be essential. You don't have to be a homeowner, we've already heard about that. You do have to be in a stable situation. So again, if you're in and out of houses or just moved in, planning on moving, the home assessment is quite a big part of the assessment process. So that might be not the right time for you to think about adopting. You need to be all settled and ready. Disabilities and health problem, they are not a barrier. This is a common question that I get asked. The Home for Good run a helpline, an inquiry line that people ring if they're interested in adoption and fostering, and I've heard this question before. Firstly, I would like to say that it's important to think that if you are adopting as a couple, then you will be assessed as a couple. So, for example, if one of you has needs that maybe you wouldn't be able to cater to some of the needs of the child, but the other can, then that will come into the assessment process. And really, all you need to show is that you can care for the needs of this child until adulthood. So if you have health problems, but are able to cater to that need, then you will be assessed in that way. It's also good to think that if you've had to overcome health problems yourself, you may then be in a really good situation to help this child overcome their own health or disability problems, which a lot of children who are waiting to be adopted will have issues like this. Pets are okay if the pet doesn't pose any threat to the child, obviously, and often in some situations, pets can be a real therapeutic aid to children who have been through traumatic experiences. And I think we've spoke about those already. Just quickly on the children, I don't know if you've heard this already, but generally the rule is that if you have you have birth children or adopted children previously, the new adopted child would be 2 years younger than your youngest child. And there are various reasons for this that you can ask people after, but it's a birth order sort of thing. So it's, they don't want you to disrupt the birth order and cause ill feeling between siblings. So that is something that also people have to consider. So children waiting. We've already heard there's approximately 6,000 children waiting. Legally, you can adopt a child up to 18 years of age, but generally the children who are waiting to be adopted are between 1 and 6. There's very few babies, and the normal age is around 1 or 2 or 3. Priority children are children whom social workers may find it particularly hard to place. So this is children that are 5 years or older, sibling groups, children from ethnic minorities, and we'll hear a little bit about that later in when we talk about the IAM programme. Okay, so this is a quick look at the adoption process. This one is generally the PACT process, so it might be that if you were to go through different routes, it could be slightly different, but the general things will be the same, and you'll have to go through similar processes, maybe not in the same order, or there might be a few details different, but again, you can research that in with different authorities. So this is kind of the stage I guess most of you will be at, gathering information, so doing lots of research, attending information evenings, choosing an agency, and then an initial interview. So with PACT, you would phone their inquiry line or have an initial interview where they would ask questions and see if you were ready at this stage to progress onto the stage one of the process. Okay, so stage one takes approximately 2 months, and this is the registration of interest form. So you'd fill out all your own details, have all your checks, which would be your DBS and your local authority and medical checks. And if you were having a person in your house who was 18 years or older, so a birth child or another adopted child, they would also have to have their DBS check. You also have to retain references, and this is generally 3, 4, each person. So as a couple, you would be expected to attain 6 references, and as a single adopt, you would be expected to obtain 3 references. There is also a 4-day preparation course, and that is held for PACT. It would be held at one of the PACT offices, so either in Brighton or in London. And this is just prepares you for for the adoption process and the adoption journey that you would go on. And although that it might seem like quite a long period, actually, people find that it's really, really helpful, especially into those first few months when you have placed with your child. Again, further preparation and reading, which we can help advise you on, and as we're packed. So this part... Okay, so we're missing stage two, but I'll just talk about it anyway. So stage two is the... is the stage where you would... It's the more intensive stage, where you'd have your home visits and... You would be meeting, you'd meet your social worker. They would come to your home, you'd have your home visits, and it's quite intensive. So this is the time when they would ask you all your personal details, and you'd get to know your social worker really, really well, which can be quite a daunting experience. But actually, people I've spoken to who have been through it have said it's actually quite empowering and quite therapeutic to go through. And you get to, the social worker then builds a report up for you that you would then take that they would take to panel, and then that report is what determines whether the panel would approve you as a approve you as adopters or not approve you as adopters. So even though it can seem quite daunting, it's actually really integral to the process that they get to know everything about you, so that not only can you be approved as adopters well, or you can also be matched really well with a specific child. And this process takes around 4 months from meeting your initial social worker to all the assessment process with the home visits. Then you go to the panel, and the panel decide whether you are approved as adopters or not. And then from then, you move on to this next stage, which is the family finding. Hope I didn't miss anything out. Please say if I did. Family finding, this is where you would be linked up with your child. So at this point, once you've gone through panel and been approved as an adopter, PACT would then pass your details onto their family finding team, who would then search the country to find various children, and you would be given their profiles to look through. And once you've looked through various profiles and you found a profile that this is my child, this is who I want to look at, this is when you'd go to matching panel. And the matching panel, similarly to the adoption panel, you go with your reports and your social worker, and then they would approve you for that particular child. And if so, for this particular child or sibling group, you'd be given a yes or a no at this panel. After that begins your introductions, which is the really exciting part. So you would have 10 to 14 days of instructions where you would go and visit the child in their foster home or wherever they may be. And this period, you would go back and forth and spend, to start with, shorter amounts of time and then longer. And you can spend it in the foster home or you can take them out in the surrounding areas. And this is just to settle, introduce you to them and also introduce the child to their parents. So for both sides, it can be quite daunting. So it's quite an important part to have that introduction period rather than just introducing them into your family home straight away. Then after that, you'd get the placement of the child into your home. So once that's all done, you get the next period where your child is with you in your home. So you establish being a parent and you have support of your social worker throughout that and reviews of how your child is progressing. And then the legal adoption order, which had happened in the courts, happens around 3 to 12 months after placement. So you have your legal placement, you have the legal order in the court with you and your social worker and whoever the solicitors may be. And then you have the celebration hearing after that with the whole of your family. And it's a really joyous time for you all to celebrate the adoption of your child into your family. This is probably something that you're better off talking to the PACT team about. But PACT do offer lifelong support to all their adopters, which is a fantastic way for your family to continue to grow and be supportive of social workers. As I'm sure you would be aware, when you have an adopted child in your family, sometimes things can get tough and you don't know how to deal with things. So having this support system is fantastic. And it also means that you can meet various other adopted families through that and they may be able to support you in various ways as well. Shall I run through them quickly? Yeah. Post-placement support team of experienced social workers. So again, that's the same. You have experienced social workers who will be able to help answer any of your questions. And they actually run a 24-hour helpline. So at any time, you can call and with any questions or queries, and they'll be there to help. Support groups and the Family Fun Day. These are fantastic ways to meet other adopters. So in your area, there may be a support group with other adopters where you can go regularly and support each other and ask questions of how you're dealing with things. And the Family Fun Day similarly attract over 100 adoptive families, and they are fantastic ways not only to mix with other adoptive families and for the children to enjoy themselves, but also support each other through the process. Bursaries, FACTS is their therapeutic service, which is they have a room in their headquarters office in Reading where you can go and you'll receive therapeutic care for your children, which is fantastic service. And they also have a bursary system, which is they raise money through the charity for families who maybe might need extra financial support, and you can apply for that there as well. Training days happen throughout the year, and you'll be given information on that via email, and you can either choose to go to them or not. So sometimes a training day that it just feels right for your family may come up, and it may be really, really important for knowing how to move forward with specific issues that you may have.
Great, thanks Connie. And I'm sorry I missed off a PowerPoint slide. That's all my fault. So well done. That's your initiation test into presenting. So earlier we were talking about how we are now really kind of focusing on the children. One of the things we are working with PACT is they're part of the I AM program. I AM stands for It's All About Me. And this is a special scheme that has been established to try to find homes for children that have been waiting a long time. They're the priority children, so sibling groups, children with additional needs, black boys, so a range of people, children, who have just been waiting a long time. And tragically, the children in this scheme, it's kind of their last chance. And if this scheme doesn't find them a home, they probably won't find a forever family. So at the moment, we are working with PACT to find homes for twin girls called Melissa and Isabella. And I've got permission from PACT to show you a video of Melissa and Isabella today. So this is kind of information that I've been allowed to share with you, and you're allowed to see their videos, but please don't kind of take photographs of the screen or tweet about this or anything like that. This kind of needs to stay in this room, as I'm sure you can understand the kind of the confidentiality issues that goes along when it comes to adoption. But let me just introduce you to these two twin girls, and then I'll tell you a little bit more about the I Am program. So we're really pleased to be able to work with PAC to try and find parents for Melissa and Isabella. And when I was speaking to PAC's communications director about this, she used a lovely phrase, and that we're after extra special parents for extra special children. And I just thought that was really true. And within the I Am, it is recognised that these are children with complex needs often. And therefore, if you work through the I Am program, there's kind of three significant things you need to know. One is children in the I Am program, they get a really comprehensive medical report. And it is not just a medical report of where things are currently. It also is a predictive medical report. So it looks at what might some of the challenges be in the future. But what's good about this report is it doesn't just tell you what they expect. It also builds in, and therefore, what would the coping mechanisms be? Therefore, what plans of actions would be put into place to manage those potential medical conditions? So it's a really thorough project and program, so people really know what they're getting into and whether they will be able to manage whatever might come in the future. So that's the first thing you get with the I Am program. The second thing is that you get extra training. So you will get extra training and any specialist training you might need in the kind of throughout the assessment process, so that when the children arrive in your home, that you are more prepared than you could possibly, or as prepared as you possibly could be to cope with the challenges that might come with these children. And then thirdly, you get even more post-adoption support than you would usually. So PAC are saying, and we know for speaking to people, that their post-adoption support is absolutely fantastic. But with an I Am child, you would get even more post-adoption support. So you would not be on your own as you kind of navigate whatever might come up. And obviously in the UK, this is a very new way of finding parents, because you can go through the adoption process with the fact in mind that you really want to adopt these twin girls at the end of it. So it's a very different way that's been developed, because it's so urgent that these children find homes. So if you're interested in finding out more about the twins, do speak to PACT at the end of this evening. They probably will get you to contact their social worker in their Reading office, who kind of is responsible for this whole I Am program. I'm now going to hand back to Connie, who is going to be praying that their slides are all in the right order. And she's just going to introduce a little bit about fostering.
Okay. With fostering, it's good to be aware that if different authorities and different agencies will have different policies on how they process applications and where those applications go. So they may have different rules on who can adopt, and they'll slightly differ. So this is the overall average, or kind of taken from leading people from the country, but just be aware that different authorities may have different specific processes. What is fostering? So fostering is different from adoption in a number of ways. It's providing a home for a child in need, and that child, in the same way for adoption, may have been through traumatic or experiences or neglect. But this can be just from a period of one night to a number of years. And foster carers will work as part of a team to care for that child. So foster carers will be one, will work with the social workers, the child's teacher, health workers, and various other professionals to, as a team, work together to care for this child's needs. And in a different way to adoption, the local authority has overall responsibility for the child. So the authority has the responsibility for the child's welfare, but the foster carer looks after the child day to day. Foster carers receive an allowance to look after that child. The allowance is from a minimum of £116 a week in England, and that can rise to a lot more for different needs of a child. So if you are fostering a child with disabilities, you will get an allowance that meets the needs to keep that child for however long. And it, 40% of young people or children return to their homes within 6 months. So a lot of the children that are going into foster care need short-term relief, and parents or guardians of that child may not be able to look after them on a short-term basis, but the hope is that those children will be able to return to their families, and the families will work alongside social workers to support them so that they can provide a stable living home for that child. There are various different types of fostering. I'll just briefly run through what they mean. So emergency foster carers have to be ready to look after a child at any time, really. So these children may have been through a traumatic event. Straight away, they need to be given somewhere warm and loving to stay. Or the parents may have suffered an illness or something that's happened that straight away they need another family, someone to look after them or someone to care for them for the night, for 2 days, and it's just, it is a temporary emergency thing. Short-term foster care is similarly child or children who need a home or someone to care for them over a short term. This may be up to a couple of weeks, but this is the families who do short-term foster care are not looking after these children for over a couple of weeks to a couple of months. Long-term is foster care is perhaps the greatest need in this country at the moment, and is caring for children who, for whatever reason, cannot stay with their birth families, and but will still have contact with their birth families and need somewhere or someone to care for them and a home to be in. As we've just heard, children who are over the age of about 6 are often put into long-term foster care if there is not an adoption placement available. So these children will need a family for up until often they're 21 years old. And they will need still need to be facilitated with contact with family members, be that siblings or birth parents. Leave care and supported lodging. So this is for often teenagers who need support before they reach out into the world. So carers who are providing leave-in care and supported lodgings are expected to prepare these young people for the world, for the real world, and they will be helping them to look after themselves financially once they leave foster care, and help them with social interactions and various things like that. Short break is often known as respite care, which can take the form of a weekend once a month or once every 2 months, and it is to look after a child who perhaps the birth parents might need a little bit of time every now and again, or foster carers may need a bit of time. So the respite or short break foster carers are just to give other people time to heal and or whatever the whatever might be going through that family at the time. Parents and baby is a foster care system whereby a parent who may not be able to look after the baby fully or provide care for the baby fully on their own, but the hope is to keep the baby and the parent together. Both the parent and the baby will then come to the foster carer, and the foster carer will provide support for the two simultaneously. And support care is similar to parent and baby, but this is more for families. So it's for families that are hoping that with support from foster carers and social workers, they will be able to remain together, but are struggling somewhere or another. So they may both come to the foster family's home, or the child may just come every now and again. But it's supporting this family to stay together. It's similar to who can adopt. Anyone can foster. You just have to be able to provide a loving and stable care and home for a child or children. Just running through them quickly, you can be single or in a couple. Again, the same applies as fostering, that you just have to have a good support network around you. Again, parents who do not have children or already have children, and Again, you don't have to be a homeowner, although you do have to be in a stable house situation. And if you're just in the process of moving house or have only just recently moved house, then it might be that you are asked to wait for a while before you apply. 18 plus is the general age range, although some authorities or agencies will have a higher minimum age. And again, it will depend on the specific situations. Importantly, with foster care, you do need a spare bedroom. If you are to foster, you have to have a spare bedroom that child will be in, and that bedroom has to be dedicated solely to the foster care, to the foster child. So you can't use it as a study or anything else. And if you have birth children, they can't be moved between bedrooms when you don't have a foster child placed with you at that time, because it could cause ill feelings with the siblings. So at any one time, it is an average of 62,000 children living with foster families in the UK, and there is a need for an extra 9,000 foster families. Children come into foster care for a wide number of reasons. Some of the reasons we've already heard, perhaps neglect or trauma they've experienced, but it could be that birth parents are going through some difficulties, health difficulties, mental health difficulties, and that these children just need someone to care for them for the short term. Another one type of children who need foster care is unaccompanied asylum seekers who may come into this country without any adults to provide care for them. So they also need foster families to look after them while they're in this country. Again, as I said earlier, the application process will vary from authority to authority and with different agencies. So it's best to contact an agency that you are wanting to work with or your local authority to find out what the exact process is. But this is a general process of how it happens. So after you've made your initial application, you would be assigned a social worker who would carry out the assessment of you. It would happen in your home, and similarly to adoption, it would be quite an intensive and intrusive, but some would say empowering process. You then have pre-approval training, which is just training to help you deal with any situation that you may come up with in the fostering process. Again, you in the same way with adoption, you'd go to fostering panel, and the social worker would put together a pack about you, take that to the panel, and then the panel would then suggest to your local authority whether you would make a good fostering family or not, but the final decision goes with your local authority. The fostering service. And then after that, that's when you would be placed with a child or children. And this could be straight after you have gone to fostering panel and been approved, or it could be in the near future or even even later on than that. We're going to play a video by Foster Care in Your Church, Elizabeth, and see how she has to say about the experience of fostering.
Elizabeth, welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us. Tell us what inspired you to become a foster parent.
Okay. Well, I've always wanted children for as long as I could remember. And I think when I got to about the age of 30, without children, the thought of fostering or adopting came into my mind. But I held it in the back of my mind for a good 10 years. And then I think when I hit 40... still single, possibility of children looking unlikely, that's when I started to really think maybe this is the option for me.
Brilliant. Now, tell us what the process of becoming a foster parent was like for you.
It was a very long process. To start with, I wasn't very proactive at all, so it took a set of circumstances, really, to make me do something about it. And that was in my workplace, in the school where I teach. I became aware, September 4 years ago now, that there was a little girl who'd just started, who was in a short-term foster placement, and that the social workers were looking for a long-term or permanent placement for her. And I also got to know her at the same time because she was being sent over to my classroom every lunchtime. So the reality of it suddenly was suddenly there. I could actually be this child's mum, perhaps, this little girl who I was growing very fond of. And that's what really prompted me to do something about it, go to the foster team and say, I'm interested.
Brilliant. And tell us how long you've been fostering.
Nearly 3 years. It'll be 3 years in October.
And being a foster parent, what's it been like?
For me, it's given me the opportunity to be a mum, which at one point I never thought would happen. It's been wonderful, challenging, tiring, and amazing, all rolled into one. I would say to anyone considering it to just keep pushing the doors and see if they open. It was a long process, and it wasn't plain sailing all the way. There were quite a lot of hurdles. But I knew if it wasn't right, God would shut the doors, and he didn't. And here I am 3 years on with a little girl.
Fantastic. Thank you.
It's great. Well done, Liz. Great. Okay, I think we're going to do some questions and answers. So.